Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet him, greet him, treat him, and street him. Today's date is June 21st, 2017, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Done a Lot of Wrong Things. And our guest skeptic is Dr. Joe Lex. Many consider Joe to be the godfather of free open access to medical education, or FOMED, movement. Dr. Lex is a retired professor of emergency medicine from Temple University. He created a site called Free Emergency Medicine Talks that has thousands of recorded lectures. It is an unbelievable global and free resource for anyone interested in emergency medicine. Welcome to the SGEM, Joe.
Oh, thank you for having me, Ken.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Now, this is another SGEM Extra called Legends of Emergency Medicine. Some people may argue about some of the choices I've made. I am sure there are very few that would argue that Joe Lex is not a legend of emergency medicine.
I think if you just stay around long enough, eventually you'll become a legend at something. I mean, my career in emergency medicine is rather checkered. I mean, that's why I chose the song that I did, Done a Lot of Wrong Things, the Bobby Charles song. I was at Temple for 13 years as an academic emergency physician. Before that, I was a community ER doc for 14 years. Before that, I was a certified emergency nurse for 7 years while I was going to medical school. Before that, I was an ER tech, and then we have what I call the blank years from 1970 to 1975. But before that, I was a medic in the Army. I actually started in emergency medicine at Fort Sam Houston in January of 1967, and then did a 40-week course called Clinical Specialist School in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania. And then I was in Vietnam. I was with the 1st Battalion Mechanized 5th Infantry, 25th Infantry Division as a medic in Vietnam. So when I retired last year, it was 49 and a half years in emergency medicine. And not many people can say that.
Well, I was just trying to do the math in my head. And believe me, they told me there'd be no math. And I was going, how many decades is that? That's almost 50 years. That would be a golden anniversary.
Yeah, well, as of January, I mean, I'm no longer clinically practicing. I still give occasional talks. But as of January, I'm 50 years in emergency medicine.
Unbelievable. Definitely a legend.
When I do talk, I tell, usually it's the young people. The last talk I gave was to a lot of medical students. And I informed them that my stethoscope was older than all of them.
Now, you gave some information to the SGEMers about your bio, but it was all medical. I want to know more about Joe Lex, the man, and I'm looking at you on this Skype call, and you have a vanity wall. You showed me your vanity wall, but you have, I think, an even better wall of musicians. Explain what's behind you there.
Oh, my goodness. Some posters and some artwork I've gathered through the years. I always tell people I had to become an ER doc to support my music habit. And people laugh, but there's more truth in that than you can imagine. Behind me, I have, well, for one thing, I have an autographed photo of Ella Fitzgerald. I have an original drawing by Terry Gilliam of Monty Python when he was a patient of mine about 20 years ago. For HIPAA reasons, I won't tell you about that except to say he was a patient. I've got a photo of Miles Davis with John Coltrane. I've got some artwork that my wife did. She's a graphic designer. Other posters of Miles Davis, John Coltrane, Ella Fitzgerald, Charlie Parker, Charles Mingus. Lots of music behind me. And as you can hear, most of it is jazz.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive, that wall behind you. Well, you did pick the theme music for this episode. And it was called Done a Lot of Wrong Things. Can you explain that a little bit more? Like, why that song?
That is a song that has stuck with me since the first time I heard it more than 40 years ago. It's the version that I'm using is Paul Butterfield and his blues band. And I identified with that song from the first time I heard it. I think anybody who's honest would identify with the song. I've done a lot of wrong things in my life, but that's okay. I'm not the only one. And then there's a line about when I get low, I know where to go, just where to go, someone there to keep me company. That would be Andrea. That would be my wife. We have been together as of this month. We've been together for 45 years now. And she is always the stability that I go to when things get a little crazy on the outside. She has her own life. I have my own life. That's why I'm in this office. She would not let me retire unless I had an office away from home. She said, I married you for better or worse, not for lunch. So I said, okay. And this is maybe a 10-minute walk from my house. I mean, it's almost like I can see my house from here. But this is my office, and that is her house, and we get together in the evening. And that is the way we have carved a life out for ourselves. And it's, you know, we still sleep in the same bed after 45 years. I'm not going to mess with that. I'm really not.
Well, after 45 years married to you, I think maybe she's the legend.
But the song, done a lot of wrong things. I always told Andrea that at my memorial service, no funeral, you know, the body goes to a medical school. And then, you know, the ashes go into the mulch heap in the backyard. But there are only three songs I want to play at my memorial service. That is Done a Lot of Wrong Things, Easy to Slip by Little Feet, and A Dying Cub Fan's Last Request. That one went away last year. I no longer want A Dying Cub Fan's Last Request at my memorial service because the Cubs won the World Series.
Well, I was trying to go through, what music would you pick? Because I know that you love the blues, and when I attended Smack in Chicago, you put on this great program of musicians for the big party. So I'm like, what is he going to pick? So one of the songs I thought, maybe the sound clip from the movie.
Good morning, Vietnam!
Because of all your service to the country during the Vietnam War.
If you talk about Vietnam, there is one song. There is one song that comes out, and this was our theme song. It was We Gotta Get Out of This Place by the Animals. Every cover band that came to the NCO Club would play that song at the end of their set because they knew that was our song.
The other song I thought about was this from the Blues Brothers. Because of your love for the blues.
By coincidence, 3 days ago, on Sunday, I was at Tom Bones Malone's 70th birthday party. Bones is a blues brother. He was the trombone player in the Blues Brothers. And it's interesting because the music that he was playing at his birthday party was mostly soul, mostly Motown. But it was, I became friends with him several years ago. I was lucky enough. He played at my retirement party, and then I was lucky enough to get invited to his 70th birthday party. Unfortunately, none of the other Blues Brothers were there. I was thinking maybe Blue Lou Marini might show up, or, you know, Paul Schaefer, because Tom played in the Tonight Show Band for so many years. But no Dan Aykroyd, no David Letterman.
Well, Paul is a Canadian, and so is Dan. Dan Aykroyd and Paul Schaefer are both Canadians.
Absolutely.
But I was wondering, do you see yourself more as a Jake or more as an Elwood?
I think I'm more of a Jake.
Really? Because I think you look more like an Elwood because you're tall.
Yeah.
Now, the other theme music that I thought you may pick, because you are the Godfather of FOMED.
That was a tag that I think Mike Cadogan put on me a couple of years ago. Either Mike or Chris Nixon, I forget who, but they declared me the Godfather of FOM. And I wasn't going to argue with that. I thought that was not a bad description. The website, freeemergencytalks.net, was actually the brainchild of one of my residents, Dylan Flipsy, who's in Western Pennsylvania now. But what I'd been doing, I'd been recording all of these lectures at meetings around the world and then putting them on, well, back then it was called You Send It. Now it's Hightail. Just putting it there for people to download and then sending out lists and saying, I just posted these. Feel free to download them. Feel free to share with your friends. And just kind of set up my own little network. And Dylan said, no, you really need a website with, you know, the FTP so people can go and download stuff. So he actually set that up for me. And when I retired last year, I handed it over to another one of my residents, Jason Hines, who is now an attending. He's finished his residency, got board certified, and he runs the website for me now. I have really sort of washed my hands of all of that stuff in emergency medicine. It's amazing to me how after 49 plus years, how easy it was to walk away. But it was not because I was walking away from something, it was I was walking away to something. I knew when I retired that I would want to do a radio show, and I'm doing a radio show. And I knew that I would want to work with musicians, and I'm working with musicians. So that made it a lot easier to actually go to something rather than get away from something.
Well, that covers the theme music part. Can you tell the S-Jammers where and when we met, if you can remember?
Chicago.
Yeah, it was Chicago. I'm surprised. It's always easier for the person who's meeting their legend to remember them because so many people meet you. And I, of course, have this very vivid recollection of meeting you at that with Lauren Westifer.
Yeah, well, that was the first time I met Lauren, and she just had that big goofy grin on her face. And then after knowing Lauren for a few years now, she always has that big goofy grin on her face. she's just a very happy person. She's always smiling. Yeah, but that was the social media. Who else was? Let's see, Leon was there.
Was that Smack or was that the ASAP meeting where it was the social media meetup?
Social media. Yeah, it was the social media. Section of either ASAP or SAEM. I forget which. I guess it was ASAP.
It was ASAP now. Yeah, it's all coming together. Yeah, and Lauren Westifer, you know, next year I'm going to have to do another summer series because she's going to be on that list because I think she is a future legend of emergency medicine. I do remember the story where I actually met you, where I actually had a significant conversation with you. And that was a couple of years ago. I cold called you. What I did was I Googled you, actually. I Googled you, found out your faculty phone number, got through to you somehow, and I introduced myself as this Canadian with this podcast, and I'd heard that you were considered the godfather of FOMED, and that you had this wonderful statement, these 4 points you like to make about, well, if you want to know how we practice medicine, da-da-da-da-da. And so I asked you, would you actually record that and send it to me so I could use it on my website? And you, of course, were very gracious and said, sure. And you recorded it and sent it to me. And then I went, but could you do it impersonating Marlon Brando? And you did. It was just so fantastic.
Okay. I'll be honest with you. I am known for that phrase. And for the life of me, I wish I could give credit to where I first heard it. And I put the part in about foam.
This is Dr. Joe Lex in Philadelphia. If you want to know how we practiced emergency medicine 5 years ago, read a textbook. If you want to know how we practiced emergency medicine 2 years ago, read a journal article. If you want to know how we practice emergency medicine now, go to a good conference. But if you want to know how we will practice emergency medicine in the future, listen to the conversations in the hallways and use foam. Take the hashtag, leave the classroom.
All of that I heard from somebody else, and like an idiot, I didn't write down the source because I would dearly love to give credit to the person who actually came up with that. But it's been attached to me. And I will live with that, but I know in my heart that it was not original with me.
Well, if you're listening to this and you were the person, then send me an email, thesjab@gmail.com, and we'll set Joe straight. Otherwise, I think you're going to have to wear that mantle. That's enough reminiscing. Let's get into the more formal part of this SGEM Extra. Legends of Emergency Medicine. And we're going to go through five things to find out your thoughts as a leader, an innovator, and disruptor of emergency medicine, okay?
Okay.
All right, here's the first question. What do you think the biggest positive change that you've seen over your 49 years in emergency medicine?
You really want me to limit this to one?
One. You get one.
One?
One positive.
International acceptance of emergency medicine as its own specialty. When emergency medicine started, it was the old white guys English speaking network. It was United States, Canada, Australia, and England. That actually started in England a little before it started in the United States. And it was that way for many years. And then the British colonies developed it, Singapore, Hong Kong. That's why it's so highly developed in those countries, because they based it on their British model. Other countries gradually came to realize the need for medicine for the population. One of the things that's unique about emergency medicine is it developed out of the needs of a population. Virtually every other specialty is developed around an organ system or a technology like radiology or a blossoming of knowledge. You know, 20 years ago, immunology was not really a specialty, but now immunology is a very important specialty because of the amount of information that is contained there. But there was really no other specialty that developed because the population of a country expected to see a doctor 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that's the uniqueness of what we do. And it's spreading through the rest of the world in places you might not expect. For instance, in Europe, it's probably far more developed in Central Europe, in places like Poland and Romania, than it is in traditional Western Europe, Spain, France, Germany. It's still trying to get a toehold there. It's just rapidly developing now in South America. In Asia, Vietnam now has had emergency medicine for several years. Myanmar is hot on their trail. All of this because people in the country, physicians in the country, recognized the needs of their population and realized we're not meeting their needs for acute care. We're not meeting their needs for emergency medicine. And gradually, the ministries of health in countries have come to the same realization that emergency medicine is a necessary specialty. So if you're going to limit me to one, that's probably got to be it. Is the international watching it be accepted, going from when I started. I mean, literally, ASEP was founded 4 days after my unit was ambushed in Vietnam and 17 guys were killed. Literally, 4 days later, ASEP was founded. And from that, we now have more than 50 societies of emergency medicine around the world. And the International Federation for Emergency Medicine is the blanket organization who speaks for tens of thousands of practitioners around the world. And that's a pretty amazing thing to watch it develop like that from literally the beginning to what it is right now.
Well, that's the biggest positive change. What's the biggest negative change you've seen? These are the tough questions.
They are tough questions because I've just spoken on an international basis, and the negatives that I see are pretty much more regional. I could talk about electronic charting, but do people in Myanmar do electronic charting?
Well, I guess it'd be the biggest thing that you've seen in your career, and maybe that's applicable to you.
It's applicable to me. Because it's a toss-up between the charting. I guess I would have to go with the charting. The charting actually drove me from one job. When I went from community to academics, that was one of the things that happened. is we got a charting system that was almost impossible to use. And I was finding myself, at the time I was working Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and I was finding myself coming in on Monday and sometimes Monday and Tuesday just to finish the charting. After seeing 100 patients in three 12-hour shifts over the weekend and doing virtually no charts except on the people who were admitted and the people who were transferred, I would then have to come in and do the charting on the next 2 days. And I got used to that, and then we got a new charting system, and it was going to go back and start all over again. The chart, as I don't know what it's like in Canada, but in the chart, in the United States, the primary purpose of the chart is to bill as much money as possible. It has very little to do with the actual care of the patient. And it's very frustrating to me. For the last years that I worked at Temple University, we would get patients transferred in with 40 sheets of paper that were a chart. And there was virtually nothing of, maybe one page of valuable information that had actually happened. The rest of it was all of these mandatory, quote-unquote, vital signs that we had to ask about. You know, are you safe at home? Do you use a seatbelt? All of that stuff is on the chart. And all of this has been dumped on emergency medicine over the last, well, 30 years now. I mean, it pretty much started with EMTALA, the Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labor Act, which said that we had to do a screening exam on anybody who came to the emergency department, regardless of their ability to pay. And the screening exam was never defined. And the screening exam might include a CAT scan of your head or a CAT scan of your belly or a consult with a pediatrician. I mean, it might include all of that. And I don't have a problem with that. I want to see everybody who comes to the ER, but they never figured out a way to pay us for it. So in the United States, the last study I saw on this, and this is more than 10 years ago, the average emergency physician literally gives away more than $130,000 in free care every year because of this unfunded mandate. And then it came to the corporations taking over the practices, trying to maximize profits for their shareholders and their readers, or their leaders. And therefore, the charting became more about capturing as much money as possible than it did about actually having decent information about a patient. And I mean, there are ways around it, I found. There's no way, you know as well as I do, there's no good way to template a history. You can template a review of systems, you can template a physical exam, but the history has to be what the patient says. And there's no good way to template that. So I would find myself doing double work. I would be free typing whatever the patient told me. And then to make sure I got up to a level 5, I would have to go back and click on different things in the history. And it turned out gobbledygook. It turned out nonsense. But at least I had a clear history of what the patient told me. So I think that's a combination of several different things there. But I think it all just points to the charting as being a major problem. The idea that we have to do this to maximize profit in a profession where I wish we didn't have to maximize profit. I wish we just could maximize the best things we could do for a patient.
Well, I did notice that you squeezed in more than one thing in that, but that's okay. Because whenever I have 6 points to make, I try to combine two of them to make it into 5. Or if I only have 4 points to make, I subdivide one into two. So I'm okay with that. But I think a lot of people share your frustration over EHRs and electronic medical records and the charting responsibilities. So I'd like to get off the negative and get back to something positive. So the third question is, what contribution to emergency medicine are you most proud of? And I put in so far because I think people should have the opportunity to contribute further if they want. It sounds like you've gone into the musical realm, but so far.
Well, people would expect me to say the website, Free Emergency Talks, and that's nice, but that's not what I'm most proud of. What I'm most proud of is the people that I have mentored who have outdone me, the people who have surpassed what I could possibly do. I met Amal Mattu when he was a resident, and I got him his first national speaking gig. And now you know who Amal Mattu is.
Who's Amal Mattu? No, who's this guy Amal? Yeah, exactly.
I met Michelle Lynn when she was first year out of residency. It was the first year we did the open mic at AAEM, an idea I came up with. Look, you come, you sign up, give a talk, we will review you, and if you're good, we'll invite you back. And this will be a way to kickstart your speaking career. Because it took me 12 years to get on the speaking circuit. I didn't actually give my first national talk until 2001. And I gave my international talk the same year. But up until then, I'd been speaking in rotary clubs, in firehouses, in retirement homes. I thought I was a good teacher, but it took a while to break through because I wasn't an academic. I was in the community. I said, I want to give other people a chance that I didn't have. So I came up with this idea of open mic session at our scientific assembly. And lo and behold, Michelle Lynn shows up. And there are two people in the room, me and John Madden, who was a member of the education committee. And Michelle starts to talk about how to read a CT of the head, which was still fairly new. You know, this is 20 years ago, still fairly new for emergency physicians. And within 5 minutes, John and I are looking at each other going, who is she? And yes, she will definitely be invited back next year. So to be able to help people kickstart their careers, you know, Joelle Borhart, Evie Marcolini, Mike Winters, all of these people, Haney Malamet is another one. All of these people, either I saw them very early and gave them a boost, or they came to me and said, can you give me a boost? Stuart Swadron's another one. I saw him speak in Canada a long time ago, 2005, 2006. I said, you're pretty good. That has got to be the thing I am proudest of, is being able, I mean, this is what a mentor is supposed to do. A mentor is supposed to, there's a saying that everything worth having is on the other side of fear. The point of a mentor is to push you past fear to get to the things worth having. And that's what I did for a lot of people, and I'm very happy with that. And the fact that they became better teachers than I am makes me even prouder. It really does. It doesn't faze me in the least that somebody's better than me at something.
Well, those people were so lucky to have access to you as a mentor. So now I'm going to give you a stage and say, what advice would you give to all the people that are listening who are interested, maybe they're medical students, going into emergency medicine? What advice would you give them? Or if they're a resident and they're about to finish up and start their career as an attending, what advice would you give to someone?
First of all, you got to find a mentor who's going to push you, who's going to be willing to let you surpass them. Secondly, if you're going into emergency medicine or you're in emergency medicine, you probably don't have a normal brain. You probably are somewhere outside the loop. While you are in training, you've got to stay in the loop. Once you're out on your own, then you can go outside the loop. And again, this is, you know, go back to my theme song, done a lot of wrong things. Thomas Edison said, to have good ideas, you have to have a lot of ideas. And that's true. And a lot of the ideas you have are not going to be good ones. You're going to do a lot of wrong things in your life. But if you have enough ideas, and if you push through and you get somebody to help pull you through, you're going to come up with some great stuff. And it's you can't be that way in training. There's been more than one medical student who rotated through the emergency department where I thought, wow, that person's going to make a great ER doc. I don't want a thing to do with training them, because I knew how difficult it would be to train that person. But I knew they were going to make a great ER doc one of these days. And that's okay. That's okay. Don't be afraid to be outside the loop. We are different from the rest of medicine. We have the most fun. We are the most interesting 15 minutes of every other specialty. So that is my advice to you. If you're getting into it early now, don't be afraid to be outside the loop.
All right. Well, we've looked back almost 50 years. So I'm going to ask you with the final question to look forward 10 years. What do you picture emergency medicine looking like 10 years from now?
A lot of our positions are going to be taken by advanced care providers. A lot of our patients are going to be going to freestanding emergency centers. And again, a lot aren't. And in the United States, we're going through this upheaval right now, not knowing how many people are actually going to be covered by insurance. As the Senate is now looking at this replacement, so-called replacement for the Affordable Care Act, which has got the number of uninsured in the United States down to the lowest it's been in ever. And that's going to go up again, and it's going to add another 20 or 30 million people to the uninsured, and that's going to change the face of emergency medicine. In that, number one, we're going to become primary care providers for a lot of people with minor and moderate illnesses. And number two, some people are not going to seek care because they don't have insurance until it's too late. And they show up as the you know, the so-called crashing plane. I mean, I always love these people who try to talk about medicine as though it is flying an airplane. You know, you've got your checklists and you've got your, that plane is sitting on the ground and it is, people have manuals they're looking at, deciding, you know, this is what we'll do in this case, this is what we'll do in this case, this is what we'll do in this case. And in the emergency department, we get handed crashing planes all the time and get told, here, fix this. Okay, well, I mean, we know what to do, but we don't always save the crashing plane. Yeah, that's going to be a big change in the States. And I'm kind of glad I got out when I did, because that's going to change the face of it. And unfortunately, I think that the requirements of the electronic charting systems are going to get more and more onerous as more people get into for-profit medicine in the United States.
Well, that ends the five formal questions. I'm going to open up the floor here, and I want to finish on something really positive. So is there anything else you want to discuss? Maybe this DJ role you've got.
Well, I'm going to put in a plug. I do a show called Dr. Joe's Groove, and it has absolutely nothing to do with medicine. It's Tuesday afternoon from 4 until 6 East Coast time. You can stream it on the web at phillycam.org/radio/listen. And it is rerun on Sunday morning at 8 o'clock. And what I do, and this is a typical ER doc sort of thing. I call it nostalgia radio for obsessive compulsives. I go back 60 years in time, and I read news stories from 60 years ago this week, and then I play music that was recorded 60 years ago this week, usually jazz. And what I try to do is tie in the old everything old is new again, tie in the news stories from 60 years ago to things that are happening now, like involvement in the Middle East, like a demagogue in Washington, like all sorts of things. The cycle just sort of repeats itself. 57 was an interesting time. Remember, we hadn't started the space race yet. Sputnik went up in October of 57, and the United States followed in 58. Batista was still president of Cuba. Fidel Castro was still in the mountains in eastern Cuba. The Yankees were winning the World Series every damn year. It was just very annoying. So it's fun to go back and listen and tell people about the news from then and then play music from then. And then in the second hour, I was on the international speaking circuit for about 15 years. I spoke probably 25, 30 different countries. But every country I went to, I would budget a couple of $100 to go to a music store and buy CDs. And the second hour, I'm featuring CDs. I've done a show on Turkish jazz. I've done a show on Romanian pop music. I just did a show on Barbadian Calypso. This is the second hour of the show. So it's a nice mix. I think people would like it. And like I say, it has absolutely nothing to do with medicine, except at the end, I do get to say, this is Dr. Joe Lex reminding you to keep your eyes open, or keep your ears open for good music, old and new, doctor's orders.
That sounds like a good prescription. Now, you said there that it's called Dr. Joe's Groove. Is that what the name is?
Yeah, Dr. Joe's Groove is the name of the show.
So the name of the show, and if anybody wants to pick up on it, is called Dr. Joe's Groove. Now, I don't know if you know, but that's probably part of the inspiration for all my intro theme music, because for each episode, I pick a little theme music, a little snippet of a song to help get that education across. And it's from the 1980s because of my age. I might be looking at my future here. I might be hosting a DJ show in 20 years.
Well, this is something that I remember I said when I retired, I was going to something.
Yeah, you're walking towards something, not running away from something.
Yeah, I actually did radio. I did radio full time from 1972 to 1975. And then I started nursing school. Let's see, I started as an ER tech in 75. And no, I was still working. I was working at WILL in Champaign or Urbana, Illinois. And then when I started nursing school, it was at community college. So I did a show at the community college radio station. And then I went to Texas for medical, or yeah, Texas in 79 to work as a nurse. Started doing a show at KNTU, North Texas University. And then I got accepted into medical school in San Antonio in 82. And I was doing a show every Monday night all through medical school at the Trinity University station. And then when I moved to Philly in 86, it just kind of fell away. I got away from it. But I always had in my mind, I still want to do a radio show. I just love radio so much, especially jazz radio. All of the shows I did, with one exception, were jazz. So that was a goal. And lo and behold, this community radio station went on the air last October and said, we're looking for programmers. And man, I was there. In fact, this is actually fundraising week. I'm going in on Friday to help with a fundraiser. Well, Friday and Saturday, both. They're doing some fundraising things. And I'm actually doing extra shows on Saturday and Sunday morning. Saturday morning, I'm doing international music. Sunday morning, I'm just bringing a whole bunch of vinyl in from my collection and sitting there and trying to talk people into contributing to the station.
Well, thank you so much, Joe, for coming on the SJAM and sharing your story.
Oh, you're very welcome. You're very welcome. It's always fun. I mean, come on, let's face it. It's fun to talk about yourself, right?
Well, as a legend of emergency medicine, can you give the SJAM tagline?
Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next time.
Done a lot of wrong things I thought was right.